Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Hi, this is Chris, and this show is going to be a repeat. I'm off traveling this week and can't put out a new show, but I think you'll like this one. This is a show I did about 2 years ago on travel to the country of Slovenia. I got my bags packed, I'm on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Oh, no. Amateur Traveler, episode 656. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about caves and mines and castles, lakes and churches, UNESCO sites, and even secret rooms as we go to Slovenia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Slovenia. This is Chris, and there's not going to be a guest on this show, but instead, for one of the first few times, we're going to do two shows in a row that are about my travels, and this time, my travels to Slovenia. And that is because I did trips back-to-back. I flew from Paris to Slovenia as a guest of the Slovenian Tourism Board, and I traveled all around the country for a week, or really for 5 days of heavy travel. This is going to be really a 7-day itinerary. I did it in 5. You're not going to want to. But I first want to talk about the things that I didn't do. For those of you who don't know how the press trip kind of works, when you're doing a solo press trip like this was, you get an itinerary from your host from the tourism board, and then you do some iteration. You say, well, that's not exactly what I like to cover. Do you have more of this? So in this case, I did not get to the eastern part of the country, although my original itinerary that they sent would have called for me to fly into Ljubljana, do some touring there, which I did do, and then go to the east. And when you see a picture of Otočec Castle or Castle Hotel where they're going to put me up for the night, you'll think I'm crazy for not heading in that direction. But that was going to be stopping at the Dolinjetsk Thermal Spa, and I apologize for my Slovenian pronunciation. My Slavic pronunciation always needs a little work. And it was going to be going to the home of Melania Trump, to Sevnica, tasting Melania cake and things like that, and then going further to the north on the Solochava Panoramic Road. And all of that would have been in the eastern part of the country before going back to some of the areas that I did go to. But I wrote back and said, well, that's great. That all sounds like fun, but could we do more UNESCO sites and fewer spas? And so that is what we did. So they sent me to a couple different UNESCO World Heritage sites, and I spent all of my time in the western part of the country. The eastern part of the country tends to be more flat, and the western part of the country is all hills and valleys and mountains. And that's where I spent my time. And I spent my time on a self-driving tour starting in Ljubljana. And Ljubljana is the natural starting point for a trip to Slovenia. It is both the capital and the major airport with the best connections. It has a medieval core, but the city goes back to Roman times, or at least to Roman times. If you go to the Congress Park, for instance, you can see some old Roman sarcophagi that are there. And Congress Park is near the Parliament building, but that's not what Congress means in this sense. This is named after a Congress that was done after the Napoleonic War. So the Congress of Vienna, and then there was another Congress here in Slovenia, in Ljubljana. Ljubljana was part of Austria-Hungary for a number of years, really up until the end of the First World War, and Slovenia was in general part of that. And then it got split up. Some western portions of Slovenia became part of Italy in between the wars and were returned after World War II. And then Yugoslavia was formed. And so Slovenia was part of Yugoslavia really up until it split up in the 1990s. Slovenia gained its independence in 1991 in the 10-day war. It was a short war because 90% of the people in Slovenia really wanted to be independent and had voted that way. But as I say, Ljubljana has its core going back to the Roman times, although there was a major earthquake in Ljubljana that really destroyed most of the town in the 1500s. And so when you go to the historic downtown, it was reconstructed in the 1500s and therefore is in Baroque style. The cathedral is Baroque, the town hall, a lot of the buildings along that center, along that city center, are also in the Baroque style. If you go a little further out to the newer portion of the town, there's a city expanded in the 1920s, and so then there's a lot of Art Nouveau, and so you sort of get this Baroque city surrounded by an Art Nouveau ring around it. Both of them, a number of lovely buildings. A lot of the old city was preserved. There's a river that runs right through the middle of town, including under a famous series of three bridges right in the center, right by the middle of town. The one thing I would say is a must-do, besides just exploring the old town in Ljubljana, is going up to the fortress, going up to the castle, because this offers some of the best views of the city. This is an old medieval castle, although it's gone through a number of different iterations, and the Romans had a fort up there originally, and it has gone through a number of generations of fortifications, but it is the most defensible part of the city, also some of the best views of the city. You can go up to the tower, up on the castle for some of the best views. You can climb that. To get up to the castle, you can either walk up the paths that go up there. It wouldn't be a huge hike. Or you can take a funicular up. In the summertime, I'm told that taking the funicular up is something that you might want to get there early in the day because the lines can get quite long. Or you might just want to go there early in the day before it gets too hot and do the hike up to see the city. I was there in April, and April is not the most crowded time in the city, and also I was there in kind of changeable weather. The week before and the week after were both quite sunny and beautiful. The week I was there, I saw quite a lot of rain, so April, not necessarily the best time to go, although certainly no tourist crowds. Probably I would wait a month and go maybe in May or go after the end of the summer in September for some of the better weather and some of those smallest crowds. I did a walking tour of Ljubljana, and one of the things that my tour guide said was that if you go to Ljubljana in a rainy day, any time of the year, it is a quieter town, and whenever there is a warm, sunny day, the streets fill up with the residents, so has almost two personalities depending on what the weather is like. But I was not in Ljubljana very long, so if you're wanting more information about Ljubljana and then also about Lake Bled, those are probably the two best-known places to go in Slovenia, and we have covered them on an older episode of Amateur Traveler, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And you can go back to there to get a little more information about both of those places. My next stop, though, was one of those UNESCO World Heritage Sites that I was interested in. And one thing to know about Slovenia is a karst region, a lot of limestone formations. In fact, the word karst comes from the Kars Plateau in Slovenia. And so a lot of the original work on karst formations or these limestone formations was done by scientists as they studied the formations in Slovenia. And there are 13,000 caves in Slovenia, 13,000 that have been identified, and there are probably some that they don't know. There's lots of underground rivers and springs and such almost everywhere we went. I would go to some secret lake where a underground spring was coming up or a river was coming out from an underground cave. And then what I was told in Idria was if the Slovenians don't find a hole, they will dig one, because Idria is a home of mercury mining. So mercury was a very precious metal. Now, the story goes that a town barrel maker found this odd substance that looked like metal but flowed like liquid and took it to a nearby goldsmith and said, "What is this?" And the goldsmith said, "Oh, that's not very valuable, but where did you say you found it?" But he did not fall for that, and so he did not give away its location. And so the town people owned this Mercury mine. They found out it was mercury. And mercury mining is very profitable. A lot of the profits of the mining in Austria, Austria-Hungary, Austro-Hungarian Empire, depending on where it was at the time, a lot of the profits of the mining came from Idria, came from this mercury mining. And the reason for that is that mercury is used in the mining of gold. And so a lot of the mercury that was mined here ended up in the New World, for instance, was sold to the Spanish or to the Habsburgs and was used to mine in Mexico. So if you want to find the mercury from Idria, it's in the water supply in San Miguel de Allende or other mining towns in Mexico. But a lot of money came from this. In fact, enough came from it that they got the attention of the rulers. And so it was bought by Karl Archduke of Austria in 1575 and was owned by whatever government owned this region really up until they closed the mine in 1995. And the way that they got noticed by the ruler, according to a story I heard in town, is they loaned the ruler some money to pay off some debts or for some campaign that he was running. And in exchange for that, they asked permission that the town or that the mining company could build a castle, which is an unusual request. And it caused the ruler to basically go and send someone to find out what was going on in this town and why were they making so much money, and found out it was this mercury mining. Now, they did close the mines. They closed it in 1995, and then when they joined the EU in 2004, in the EU, all mining, import, and export of mercury has been banned because mercury makes you crazy. If you were a mercury miner in those days, it was a very well-paying position, but you wouldn't live past the age of 40 because mercury is bad for you. And they knew that at the time, and they knew there were dangers involved, but of course it was very valuable. But there's a great museum in this castle, the Gewürkeneg Castle, that was owned by the mining company, is now a museum that, among other things, tells the story of this mercury mining. I really recommend a visit to this castle because you can see, for instance, how the process worked. One of the great places that tells you why mercury is valuable, there's a bowl of mercury, of liquid mercury. It's sealed so that you don't have mercury vapors there. And in it is floating a ball of steel, a steel ball, because mercury is heavier than steel. And so steel will actually float in mercury. And that density is one of the things that caused it to be used in gold mining. And so you can learn more about the mercury process. You can lift a hunk of cinnabar. Cinnabar is mercury ore, and that's what they were actually mining for. They weren't looking for the liquid mercury because that was more dangerous, but they would find the ore and then they would cook that basically to turn it into vapors, but in any controlled process, and capture the mercury and then ship that off in very heavy, small jars that were very expensive, at least at the time that the most of the mining was going on. Let's take a break here and hear from a sponsor. The other sponsor of this episode is The Thing About France. The Thing About France is a new podcast that invites American cultural figures to speak candidly on the fascinating and complicated relationships between France and the U.S. Tune in every Wednesday with host Benedict de Montelard, cultural counselor of the French Embassy, to hear new interviews with artists, filmmakers, authors, and other prominent cultural figures, such as humorist David Sedaris, jazz singer Dede Bridgewater, and director of the Whitney Museum of American Art, Adam Weinberg. The Thing About France is available wherever you get your podcasts. From now until May 15th, 2019, The Thing About France is giving away 2 round-trip tickets to Paris on Air France. All you have to do is subscribe on Apple Podcasts. That's it. Bonne chance. The other thing you can find that is talked about in the castle is, while the men were doing this, because this was men only and not even boys, you couldn't be a mercury miner until you were a man, at least a young man. And while the men were doing that, the women were taking part in a tradition of lace making, which still happens in the town. So you can see examples of this lace making and even demonstrations of it here in this castle. And so definitely worth a stop. There is a small fee, but it's worth it. The other thing you should do in Idria is you can take a mine tour. You can go down into the mercury mines. I am told it is safe. I did do it. It was quite fun. The one danger that there is they're going to give you a hard hat and I managed to hit my head with the hard hat, fortunately, at least a dozen times in these low corridors. I'm 6'3", and it was a lot of work to carve things into rock. At first, they were just doing it with hammer and chisel, and later on, they would do it with dynamite, and later on, with pneumatic tools. When they first started the mercury mining, you'll see in the mines, they only made tunnels that were about 3 feet tall. You won't have to walk through any of those, but you'll see some that were the original height, and they were doing everything on their knees, just because it was so much work to carve. So, quite an interesting experience, and quite a different experience to do something like this on a trip. And it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site because of the historic significance of this mine, and then also the mine in Almaden in Spain, which was an even larger mine that started basically back in Roman times. But both of those mines are together UNESCO World Heritage Site. Another site that is a proposed UNESCO site, and it's a really quite a unique site, is the Franja Partisan Hospital. And I quite enjoyed this as a history buff. One thing you may know is that Yugoslavia prides itself, or the different portions of Yugoslavia, like Slovenia, that they gained their own independence from the Germans in World War II. They were not liberated by the Soviets or liberated by the Americans and the Brits. And so that is one of the reasons why post-World War II, Tito, who was communist, wasn't still in the Soviet bloc. He wasn't communist because the Soviet troops were in there and installed a communist government. They were communists and they were partisans, and they were fighting the Germans long before the end of the war. And one of the unique things about that is they had such a large number of partisans that they actually set up these secret hospitals, and one of them is this Franja Partisan Hospital. And these were set in places where they would not be discovered, where they were easily defensible. And so even if you don't like history, the trip to the Franja Partisan Hospital is something that you would enjoy. I think your kids will enjoy. It's up this beautiful gorge, and it's much more easy for me to hike it than it was in the time the stretcher bearers would carry people in up this gorge, which was not easy. And they also only did it at night. And they only did it when the people, no matter which side they were on, they might be a German soldier they were treating, they might be an American flyer, or they might be a Yugoslavian partisan. They were blindfolded. They were spun around a few times so they wouldn't know where they were, so that they would protect the secrecy of this hospital. And as you go in, you can see some of the bunkers that were installed on up on the high cliffs to protect the partisan hospital. But it's an interesting place because you get up into this gorge and you finally get there and you find something with relatively comfortable cabins and a generator and an X-ray machine. And it's really a functioning hospital, but hidden away. All of the supplies to build these cabins were lowered down the sides of the cliffs on the side of this gorge. So something worth visiting, especially if you're a history buff, I would say. And that is just outside Idria. It's about a half an hour drive from there. All of the things I'm talking about, you can also find in a blog post on the site that I'll link to, which is What to Do in Slovenia. Not a very unique name, but a good SEO name for that. The next stop that I did is the Predjama Castle. And this is one of the prettiest castles I have seen. And the reason for that is it's up on the side of a cliff in the opening of a cave. So it's quite an unusual location. It isn't necessarily historically that significant. There was an interesting siege that happened there of Erasmus of Lug, who was the owner of the castle and kind of a robber baron, a Robin Hood-like character, who was besieged in this castle way back in the, I want to say it was the 1200s, but I don't have it in front of me here. He managed to kill one of the favorites of the king in a duel, but that was not looked upon very fondly, and so they besieged him in his castle, and they were hoping to starve him out, but they didn't know that through the cave there was a secret entrance that he could go out, and so he would throw fresh fruit and fresh produce at them to show that he wasn't in fact starving, that he had a way out. But he was finally betrayed by one of his men who, the story goes, lit a candle while he was in the privy, which was in a thinner walled section of the castle, and they used artillery, and I've seen a couple different stories, either cannon or trebuchet, I'm not sure which it was, because I've seen conflicting stories, to target where he was and kill him. But even if you don't care about the history, it is a beautiful castle, definitely Instagram worthy if you care about your photography. And that is right near Postonia Cave. And Postonia Cave is something that I haven't heard as much about in the U.S., although it is a very popular tourist spot, certainly with Slovenians and I think with other Europeans as well. This has been a tourist spot since 1818, shortly after it's being discovered. It was being toured by kings and queens and princes and presidents and all sorts of tourists since that time. The cave was equipped with a train system back in 1872 and then was lit with electric lights in 1884, even before the city of Ljubljana. And so nowadays, when you get there, you take a electric train 15 minutes into the mountain before you even get out and start touring it for another 45 minutes or so. And so even if you have mobility issues, you can just do that train portion and you can do a 30-minute train ride into the castle. And even that portion I thought was very interesting. In fact, as you're going past some of these chambers with their stalactites and stalagmites, you're thinking, well, if this is so lovely, what are we going to see if we're skipping this? And you get inside and there are even larger formations and formations that are, you know, 250,000 years old. These stalactites and stalagmites form at about a rate of a millimeter a year, or maybe even a tenth of a millimeter a year. And so when you see things that are towering above you, they are literally tens of thousands of years old or hundreds of thousands of years old. And so I thought it was a very beautiful cave. I really quite enjoyed this visit. There's a portion of it, again, for history buffs, that is blackened because at one point the Germans kept a fuel dump in there and was blown up by partisans who knew how to get in through the back. They had walled up the tunnel, but the partisans figured out a way through and blew that up in World War II. So I did that cave, and then I did a second cave. And so the more popular cave is the Postonia Cave. But the UNESCO World Heritage Site cave is the Skocin Cave, or Skocin Caves. And to be honest, I didn't want to like the Skocin Caves. And I'm not quite sure that I'm saying that right, because the pronunciation here looks like it should be S-H-K sound, and I don't know how I can't get my lips to do that. So I'm going to say Skocin, and my apologies if I'm saying that incorrectly. But the reason I didn't want to like it, first of all, is you can't take photographs inside. So there's a couple pictures on my website, but anything inside the cave was obtained from the tourism board because I was not allowed to take pictures inside the cave. You can take it at the mouth of the cave, which is actually quite spectacular. But so that made me not so happy with it to begin with. And then I had just done the Postonia Cave, which is really, as I said, quite spectacular. And the beginning of the Skocin Caves, you walk for about 10 minutes down from the visitor center to the entrance, kind of the back of the cave, to the Silent Cave. And the Silent Cave was nice, but I don't think it was as spectacular as the Postonia Cave. So as we're walking through the Silent Cave, I'm sort of writing the blog post in my head that says, you know, you don't need to go to both of these, and I would probably recommend the Postonia Caves. I say, I had that in my head, and then I got to the point where the Silent Cave turns into the Murmuring Cave. And the reason they call it the Murmuring Cave is that the Murmuring Cave has a river running through it. And I say a river running through it, not like a stream, but like an actual river, and it's an underground gorge. So you come out of the Silent Cave, which is a hanging cave that goes down from the Silent Cave down into the depths of this underground chasm. And you come out of here and it's this misty scenery where you can see the lights that are coming off of the path on the far side of the cave, and they're going off into the mist that is coming up from this river with the roar of the river coming by. And it is amazing. It went from, oh, you know, I don't know if you should do this, to this is my must-see spot in all of the places I went in Slovenia is the Skočan cave. You're going to have to be a little more physically fit, unlike the other cave where you can even do it if you are wheelchair bound and you just stay on the train. This one, you're going to have to do at least 500 steps up and down into the cave. So it's a little more strenuous, but it is so worth it. I have gotten claustrophobia before. You could see why one would get claustrophobia in a cave. This is the first time I ever had any acrophobia, fear of heights, while in the cave. You're crossing over this chasm and looking down at this raging river below you, down in the murky depths. It felt like something, and I'm not the first person to say this, out of Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, in the Mines of Moria. You expected a Balrog to show up, if you know what I'm talking about. And if you look, when you're in that portion of the cave, look further up on the walls, and you'll see the old route that tourists would go. And this is one of those oh hell no kind of routes. I mean, this is a route that is clinging to the side of the caves up there with rickety bridges and things like that. And I just can't imagine what a trip would have been like into the cave at that time. I should say that in the Postonia caves, I did the normal tour, but there are some longer tours, even some tours that spend the night in the cave and do more spelunking in less visited portions of the cave. So if you want to do something a little more adventurous, do one of those other tours, or do that next time you go to the cave. Do the normal tour the first time, and then do one of these others the next time you go in. Even as you get out of the cave, in the Skočan caves, you're exiting into a sinkhole. You're exiting into a place where the top ceiling of the cave has collapsed. And so you're in this hole where the river is carving its way through it. And it's coming out of cave and it's going back into a cave. And even if you just saw that portion, I think that portion is pretty spectacular. The next stop I did in all of this is not that far from each other. Basically, I drove from the south end of Slovenia up to almost the northern end in about 2.5 hours. So, I mean, I'm doing driving tour, but most things are not that far apart. And I was doing most of it over the course of this week, although I did drive back from a place I'll get to on the Adriatic coast up to north of Ljubljana in about 2 hours. Let's take a break here and hear from a sponsor. I'm pleased to say that this week's episode is again sponsored by The Great Courses Plus, which has a series of basically college-level courses without the homework or the grades. You can watch them as video or listen to them as audio. You can watch them on the website, thegreatcoursesplus.com, or download The Great Courses Plus app. One of the courses that I've been re-listening to is The History of India. And I mentioned that I listened to this before I took the group to India, but I've been re-listening, for instance, to the lecture they did on the caste system. And caste system is not an Indian word. That's actually what the Portuguese called a rather complicated system that comes out of the Vedic culture. And it was fascinating as the professor behind this course, who is Michael Fisher, explained some of the historic roots and some of the roots within the Vedic hymns that are the sacred text of Hinduism. I think you'll like this course and their other courses. I've arranged a special deal where you can get 1 month free. All the courses you want for free for 1 month by going to thegreatcoursesplus.com/amateur, AMATEUR. And I hope you enjoy The Great Courses Plus as I'm enjoying it. And thanks to The Great Courses Plus for sponsoring this episode. The next stop I had is someplace you probably heard of, although you may not know that you've heard of it. You've probably heard, if you're a horse fan, of the Lipizzaner horses or the Lipizzaner stallions, these white horses that were popular with the Austro-Hungarian court. They're actually technically gray horses with white hair. If you look at the skin of the horses, they're actually gray, and most of them are white. There are some that are darker color. But they come from the Slovenian city of Lipica, and that's where Lipizzaner comes from. And Lipica is near the Italian border, and this is where all of the Lipizzaners were raised during the time of Austria-Hungary, And then later on, when Austria-Hungary was broken up into the various pieces after World War I, some of the horses went up to Slovakia and some went to Vienna and some stayed down here. Fascinating. If you're interested in horses at all, you can actually do a riding experience, but you need to be a much better rider than I am. You have to be an experienced rider to do a riding there, but you can do a riding show. And so I went to one of the riding shows. A little hard to take pictures of because it was dark and they had green lights for some reason when I was there, but they were putting the horses through all these maneuvers, and these horses are prancing and moving sideways and backing up and just doing a lot of these trained maneuvers that they were known for. So these Lipizzaner horses are known for that, and then they're also known for carriage horses, because that's one of the things that a court wanted was carriage horses. They weren't war horses or anything like that. They all go back to about 8 different stallions and 4 different breeds that were bred together to make this, and from different areas. And if you go through the stables, if you can take a tour of it, and they will, this particular stallion, and it's has a first letter that comes from, is it from the Spanish stallions or is it from one of the Italian stallions? And not meaning to make a Rocky joke there. And then the last name of it will be the name of its mare. And they'll have a coding number as well. They no longer tattoo those numbers on the horses, but they have embedded chip that tells them that information. But if you're a horse lover especially, I would say that Lipizza and touring the Lipizzaner stallions would be something that I would highly recommend. There is a hotel right there where I stayed, which is part of this whole complex. Very convenient if you're there. And there's other activities around there as well, a golf course and all sorts of other things that I did not take part in. I'll have another blog post later on that will talk about all the different hotels I stayed in. I'm not going to try and do that list in the podcast, except where I want to point out something that's a little more unique. My next stop was Piran, and Piran is the coastline of Slovenia. Slovenia has a very small coastline, I think it's less than 20 miles, on the Adriatic in between Croatia and Italy. So Italy and Croatia do not meet. Instead, there's this little sliver of Slovenia, and there is the town of Piran. And Piran used to be a Venetian town in the Middle Ages, and so it has that Venetian feel. It feels like a lot of the towns around the Adriatic. You can look up at the tower of the church on the hill, for instance, and very quickly see the similarities to the main clock tower that you'd find in Venice. And just the main square, as you see the winged lions of Venice, it's very easy to tell that this was a Venetian city. Beautiful little medieval core city with a wonderful harbor. Quiet on the day I was there, although even in a semi-rainy day, there were a number of different sailboats out on the Adriatic. Beautiful city, still has its old city walls that you can hike on as well. I visited Piran in just a few hours, and this is really one of those places where I would say, while I did this whole trip in about 5 days, I flew in on a Sunday night and I flew out on an early Saturday morning, I would recommend pausing in some places and spending more time. And Piran is definitely one of those places. And probably Ljubljana is the other place that I would spend more time. I got to Ljubljana late at night and left before noon, because when you're on a press trip, you're on a tighter time frame. So I would recommend that schedule. I'd say spend a little more time in both of those cities at least. While I was there, one unusual thing about Piran is near there is a series of salt ponds. These are the Sechovia salt ponds, and that one I'm probably butchering. But basically, there's a series of salt ponds right there on the Adriatic to the east of the main city of Piran. And what would happen is there were these long, flat, marshy areas where they, even today, let them dry out and harvest the salt. And this was a very important portion of the economy, especially in the Middle Ages, where whole families would move to the salt pans or the salt ponds for the summertime to watch over and scrape up the salt and get that ready for sale, because you could only do it during the summer. There's a small limited window of time where you have enough dry, hot weather to create salt or to evaporate the salt and turn it into a sellable product. And if You probably know already all of the significance of salt in that time period because it was the only thing that could preserve meat. And that's why we get things like salary in English or being worth your salt, because it was a very valuable commodity. And this was one of the places that they did that. And they still do it. There's still a tradition there where you can watch people. And I say watch, you're watching water evaporate. So you can go to a museum there, for instance, and learn about the process. Even if you're not interested in salt production, this is also an area where you'd see a lot of waterfowl, because this is an area that is marshes and such. And some of it is salt ponds and some of it is not nowadays. One unusual thing, while I was there, I did have lunch with somebody from a fish farm. There's a commercial fish farm there that you can tour. I did not have time to do it on this very rapid itinerary, but you can go out there on a boat or even on kayaks out into the bay where they have these large nets where they have fish, and they also have information about what they're doing in this commercial fishing process. They're quite proud of it because it's one of the ways to be more sustainable, getting your fish from someplace local instead of flying in your Chilean sea bass. They'll raise sea bass here, for instance. You can get cooking classes there as well. So that's the Fonda Fish Farm. So if you like those sort of industrial, how do things work kind of tours, that's something that you might enjoy. The fish is good. That's all I can say. I'm not a big fish lover, but it was definitely high quality fish. And the next day, thinking of how things are done, I did something quite the opposite. If you remember, you know, some of you are way too young to remember this. When I was a kid, there was a movie, and there was the book Heidi, and there was a well-known movie at the time about the little girl in Switzerland who goes up to live on the high pastures with the cows during the summertime. Well, that is something they did in many places in Europe, and one of the places they did it was Slovenia. And one of the places they did it in Slovenia is the Velika Planina. And so this is back north of Ljubljana on the way to Lake Bled. And so I went and toured the Velika Planina with a tour guide, a local tour guide from the town of Kamnik. And it is a place where Slovenians go to hike in the summertime, well, at least in the summertime, sometimes other times of the year. In the wintertime, it is a ski area. And so you're going up on the gondola and then going up on the ski lifts up to these trails. And it's a lovely hiking area. We happened to be there when they had just had a fresh April snow, so you had all these wildflowers out covered with a layer of snow. So it was beautiful, but a little difficult day in terms of the sights you would normally be able to see. The mountains, the snow-capped mountains, were just kind of peeking through the clouds at times there. But a lovely little hike. It's easy to hike if you take the gondola up. You can hike on a relatively flat area, or you can hike up the mountain. Either are available. There are places to eat while you're up there with some good hearty hiking kind of food. And then while you're there, they have an area where the cow herders still go in the summertime, and they still have their traditional cow herding sheds. And these are interesting sheds because there's an inner shed and then there's a second wall around it, and the cows stay in between those two walls. And you may only have like a dozen cattle. This is not very large, and these are milk cows. And there's one particular region where the cow herders are still going. And in there, there's also a museum where you can see the traditional way that they lived when they were up there with the cattle surrounding them. And they would make a homemade cheese that they would make in the summertime when you couldn't bring the milk down the hill. It would take way too long to do that. So you would make a cheese instead with the milk while you were up there. You can still knock on some of the doors, I am told, and get some of that traditional cheese. But if you're interested, it's a good place for hiking or to go and explore that little museum, little tiny museum that's in a hut that shows you how life was there in the high mountains. And then the final stop that I made was Lake Bled. And Lake Bled is probably the one place that, if you've heard of a friend going to Slovenia, you've probably heard about Lake Bled. And this is a very picturesque, very touristy place that was, I'm not going to say it's one of the prettiest spots in Slovenia, but when Slovenia was part of Yugoslavia, Tito, who was the ruler of Yugoslavia, could have had a place anywhere, and he had a summer home here on Lake Bled. Beautiful alpine lake, and is best known for the church that is in the middle of the lake. And so you can go out in this church, and this is the Island Church of the Assumption of Mary. And one tradition is that brides and grooms will go out to this island, and for luck, a bride will be carried by her new husband up the many steps to this church, which is supposed to give you luck. It will certainly give you chiropractic bills. There are a fair number of steps there. But the way out to it, there's a ferry that goes out there, but the traditional way out there is taking one of these big oar boats, and they're called a pletna, and they will hold maybe a dozen people, and there's a rower in the back with some great big long oars as he's standing up and rowing you out to this island. So definitely something I would do that, but I would also go up to the castle. There's a castle up on the hill with some of the best views of the lake. Bled Castle also has a small museum that's worth visiting about some of the history of people in the area. People have been in the area since prehistoric time. So I would tour that museum. I would do that and go up for the views as well. That's the itinerary we ended up with me on. I really enjoyed it. I would recommend that itinerary. Obviously, if you're more interested in the spas and going and having Melania cake, I'll put links in the show notes to those particular spots that I didn't go to off in the east as well. But a beautiful country, a very, very green country. I was driving everywhere, as I said. It is a fairly easy country to drive in. I didn't find the drivers to be all that aggressive or anything most of the time, but it is a hilly, windy road kind of place. So if you're not comfortable with windy roads, I would probably not drive there. It wasn't bad. The highways are very good, fairly well marked. I was getting by with just normal GPS navigation. The only trick, I think, was when I was going up to the Franja Partisan Hospital, I was navigating with Siri, and Siri was trying to get me all the way up to this secluded secret hospital in a gorge. And of course, you can't drive there. You have to stop in a parking lot. And so I drove past the parking lot as it was trying to get me there. So there's a couple times where my navigation got me close, and then I just had to ask someone. So I had to ask a very curious farmer why I was driving up this mountain. He didn't speak any English, but I did find quite a few people who did speak English in Slovenia. Like so many smaller countries, they don't dub their movies and they don't dub their music and things. And so you get a lot of English music, English movies and things like that. So a lot of people spoke very good English there. Didn't have any trouble getting by with little to no Slovenian language skills, and certainly none at all in restaurants and hotels and those sort of places. And easy to find tours in English. There were a few places where the information in the museum might only be in Slovenian, although a lot of places it really was in Slovenian and English. And if you had a third language that you spoke, you were out of luck. You really needed to speak one of those two. Prettiest spot. There are so many spots that were pretty. I'd say the most stunning spot there still has to be the Skocin Caves. That was just jaw-dropping amazing. And it really doesn't compare to any other cave system I can think of that I have been in. And I've been in a number that were equally lovely. I'd say the Postonia Caves is comparable to some number of caves that I've been in, although I thought it was really good. But the Skocin Caves was just stunning. And then, as you know, I usually ask people one thing that makes them laugh and say, only in Slovenia. As I said, I really did have to laugh when I was in Idrija and they were saying, if the Slovenians didn't find a hole, they would dig one, because there really are a lot of caves and you just kept seeing them in the area. And then, of course, the mining tradition as well. So I know that Slovenia is getting more tourism, but I honestly don't think it gets the tourism it deserves. It really is a beautiful spot. It's a little more affordable than some of the spots to the west of it, like Italy. It again has that rich history, beautiful architecture, amazing scenic wonders, as we talked about. I would recommend Slovenia, and I would recommend it, I think, a little higher than I thought I would. I knew I would enjoy it, but I enjoyed it even more than I thought I would. So I would recommend Slovenia in this particular itinerary. And again, if you're interested in the post that I wrote about Slovenia, the one that's out there right now, you'll find a link in the show notes to what to do in Slovenia on amateurtraveler.com. Well, I didn't talk about food. I enjoyed the food there. I would say it's almost a combination between some of the Slavic food that you'd get further north and east and Italian food. And so you'd get things with a lot of pork, a lot of meat sauces. I think a typical dish, for instance, would be an idria. You get, and this is not a word I'm going to be able to say, idritsky zlikrofi, which is a pasta that is shaped, as I understand it, like Napoleon's hat. And it is covered, though, quite typically with a meat sauce or a mushroom sauce or something like that. And that seemed like a fairly typical dish. Something with dumplings, something with a meat sauce is quite common. More fish as you get down to Piran, for instance. Good food, hearty food, though, I would say. It's sort of food that would get you through cold winters. But tasty. I had a number of really delicious types of meals. Dumplings, some things more like a blintz, and again, a lot of meat sauces and dairy. Another weird thing that happened on this tour that I completely forgot about because it's another thing where I could not take pictures was I was asked if I was interested in taking a tour of the secret rooms of Hotel Yama. And this is the hotel that's right there at the Postonia Caves. And it's a historic hotel. It was used as a hotel for tourists during the time of the communist rule, during Yugoslavia time. And apparently when they were doing a recent remodel, they found secret rooms that appeared to be where people from the army were recording conversations. And so they present this in almost an escape room-like fashion. There was a whole lot more production that went into this than I expected. It was actually pretty cool, but I have no pictures to back up the fact that I did this, so maybe I'm just making the whole thing up. And that was my trip to Slovenia. It was a wonderful trip, something I would recommend, and especially this particular itinerary. I had an email from Brian this week who said, "Chris, love the Amateur Traveler podcast. Are the lyrics available for the song Got to See One More Cathedral ... Some of the words get cut off and it's driving me crazy trying to figure it out. Is there a name / artist for that song, and did you have it custom made? Sorry for the strange question." Well, we've answered the question before about the podcast. I've answered the question before, but I'll answer again that the song was commissioned for Amateur Traveler way back years ago from a Jeff Smith from Nashville, who was actually also a guest on the show way back talking about Nashville, but I had not been asked about the lyrics. And so the specific verse that you're talking about there, it says, "Got to see one more cathedral, got to sit at one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today." And that's actually the verse that I wrote. In the frequently asked questions page of Amateur Traveler, there is only one frequently asked question, that is who wrote the theme song. In that page, which is amateurtraveler.com/FAQ, you will find a link to the whole theme song if you're interested in downloading it. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler so we can go play the rest of that theme song. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
A lot is being asked of people working in schools.
Teachers have more and more things to do.
The shortage of teachers right now, having to fill a lot of holes and wear a lot of hats, it's very difficult.
There are steps you can take to manage stressful times, whether in the classroom or outside of work.
For me personally, I can disconnect by just being outside.
Laughing works a lot.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. A lot is being asked of people working in schools.
Teachers have more and more things to do.
The shortage of teachers right now, having to fill a lot of holes and wear a lot of hats, it's very difficult.
There are steps you can take to manage stressful times, whether in the classroom or outside of work.
For me personally, I can disconnect by just being outside.
Laughing works a lot.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.